All right, y'all, welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I am the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and I've recorded more than 5,000 interviews going back to 2003, all of which are available at scotthorton.org. You can also sign up for the podcast feed. The full archive is also available at youtube.com/ScottHortonShow. All right, you guys, on the line, I've got the great Stephen Zunis. He is a professor of politics at the University of San Francisco and over there at accuracy.org. They recently put out a press release about Susan Rice, who is likely, I guess, who is said to be on the short list to possibly be named to be Joe Biden's vice president in the upcoming presidential race here. So they said, you know, you ought to talk to Stephen Zunis about who Susan Rice really is, because on the surface, TV will tell you, look, an accomplished black woman. Isn't that great? Who could possibly criticize that? And then Stephen Zunis says, well, I read things, and so I would like to comment. So here you are. Tell them what you know there, Stephen.
Well, Susan Rice served as Assistant Secretary of State for Africa under the Clinton administration. She served as U.N. Ambassador, United States Ambassador to the United Nations, and later National Security Advisor under the Obama administration. And she got a reputation of being among the more hawkish members of the foreign policy elite. During the lead up to the invasion of Iraq, she was going around on the talk shows talking about what a threat Saddam Hussein was. He supposedly had all these weapons of mass destruction,
Is that right? I did not remember that. She did, huh? Where was she? Was at Brookings at the time or something?
Yeah.
So exactly. Running around with O'Hanlon and Pollock?
Yeah, very, very much so.
And, I see. Isn't that interesting? Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and the thing was, what was particularly, disturbing, I mean, you may remember Colin Powell's speech before the United Nations, which was widely ridiculed. He showed these fuzzy photographs and said, it shows Iraq has all these weapons in there. And somehow the inspectors that were crawling all over Iraq at that point, they'd finally been let back in. They weren't finding him. But he said, they were there anyway. And, she made a statement that said, Powell proved that Iraq had these weapons and is hiding them, and I don't think many informed people doubted that. And this is Orwellian. I mean, those who blindly accepted Powell's transparently false claims were well informed, while UN officials, arms control specialists, and others knowledgeable of the reality of the situation were presumably otherwise. She also, talked about, Saddam's weapons of mass destructions need to be dealt with forcibly, and that's the path we're on. It's clear that Iraq is a major threat, and it was. And here's someone who clearly doesn't know the difference between real and imagined threats, and yet she's praised as this expert on foreign policy, and it's not just on Iraq. I mean, she.
You know what? Though, stop at Iraq for a second, though, because. She was in, what exactly do you remember was her title in the Clinton administration there in the later years?
In the Clinton administration, she was Assistant Secretary of State for Africa, and had more general foreign policy positions under Obama.
Still, she was Dick Cheney off in Houston working for Halliburton and with Enron or something. She had been right there.
Oh, yeah.
Had a front row seat to America's real policy against helpless Iraq, and so had to be lying, right?
Oh yeah, I have a hard time. She's as smart as everybody says she is. Yeah,
because we try to be charitable and say, well, maybe she was a damned fool, but no, couldn't possibly be. Not in this case.
And to be so adamant. Well, what's also kind of weird about it, and there's this widely circulated. Article from the Chicago Tribune that said, She did not support the Iraq war. And technically speaking, if you look carefully, I have not found her saying, yes, let's invade Iraq. But she, everything she said was reinforcing the argument for war and denigrating the arguments against war.
Right.
And so she was trying to have it both ways, you know, because she wanted a post in the next Democratic administration. And so she was kind of hedging her bets.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you know, not only was she wrong, I would argue that's pretty damn unethical to, you know, on the most important foreign policy decision of the decade, you know, of the generation, you know, to be trying to, you know, to have it both ways and in such ways. Saying, oh, I didn't really support the war. I just helped make it possible.
Right. When, of course, the case, the real case there was not just that the case for war was a lie. It was that this is going to be an absolute catastrophe. You're going to do, the father deliberately decided not to march to Baghdad because of reasons. And you're saying you're going to go in there and knock the whole thing over and stay? It's madness. If I had asked you in 2002, or you had asked me in 2002, we would have told each other, this is absolutely crazy. This isn't just wrong. This is going to be a nightmare.
Yeah, exactly. 90% of Middle East scholars, 90% of U.S. Middle East scholars, and I'd say 80% of State Department specialists, you know, State Department veteran, you know, Foreign Service officers specializing in the Middle East, knew this was going to be an utter disaster. You know, so it wasn't like the opinion was evenly divided or that everybody supported the war, as people are trying to say nowadays.
Right.
You know, there was a pretty broad consensus, you know, that this was, you know, I mean, it's to go around, you know, saying, you know, she had no way of knowing otherwise is ridiculous.
Exactly right. Because in other words, it was her and O'Hanlon and Pollock and some of those more prominent liberal hawks going along with Bill Kristol and Richard Perle and the most fanatical of the neoconservatives, while even Jim Baker and Brent Scowcroft were saying, don't do this.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, I mean, you know what? When Brent Scowcroft writes in the Wall Street Journal, don't attack Saddam, well, that's just it. You know what I mean? Anyone who's worried about their credibility or whatever can just hide behind him, okay? The father's best friend writing a note to the son for the father in the Wall Street freaking Journal saying, please don't do this. Anyone, you know, even if you were just whatever, a right-wing Republican of any description, anywhere on the right, you could say, I don't know, Brent Scowcroft seems to think that Saddam and Osama ain't the same guy. I don't know. You know, if you were paying attention and were looking for someone to, someone's authority to invoke, how about General Scowcroft, the father's national security advisor during the last war over there?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, exactly.
Anyway, I'm just ranting and raving all over your interview. I'm sorry, but I just hate these people. They're smug.
For a long time. But unfortunately, Iraq is not an aberration. I mean, you know, she I remember when she was ambassador to the United Nations, she said that there was no daylight between the United States and the right-wing Israeli government of Benjamin Netanyahu regarding Iran's nuclear program. And this was when Netanyahu was pushing for a unilateral attack. We can look at Africa, you know, which is her specialization, her support for autocratic regimes. She helped suppress a United Nations report criticizing the government of Rwanda, a U.S. ally, for supporting the M23 rebels in eastern Congo. They were led by this notorious warlord wanted by the International Criminal Court. They've wreaked havoc across eastern Congo. But she dismissed the report, saying, oh, it's eastern Congo. If it weren't for them, it would be some other group. And then she also delivered a eulogy for the late authoritarian ruler of Ethiopia, Meles Zenawi. She referred to the dictator as a true friend of mine, and calling him brilliant and uncommonly wise, able to see the big picture and the long game. But she's most notorious, I think, about Israel and Palestine. I mean, you know, she I remember Congressman Robert Wexler. He was then leading a right wing pro Israel advocacy group. He wrote an op-ed in Politico that, quote, Israel has, this is when Obama was in office, Israel has no greater champion in the current administration than Susan Rice. And she did her best at the UN to block the United Nations. I mean, yeah, it's true. The United Nations sometimes does go a little overboard in its criticism on Israel. But these the resolutions she vetoed, she opposed, were quite reasonable, quite moderate. They didn't question Israel's right to exist. They didn't question Israel's right to self-defense. They just said that Israel, like every country, has to abide by basic international standards like the Fourth Geneva Convention and the United Nations Charter, and you shouldn't go around colonizing countries, nations that you are occupied by military force, and you can't go around killing civilians with impunity. And she said, this is all anti-Israel crap. They should not try to resolve the conflict. It should be up to the so-called peace process, which is totally rigged in Israel's favor. She's called the bombing of civilians legitimate self-defense. She's really hardcore on this issue as well. And this is at a time where, you know, polls show a vast majority of Democrats, oppose the occupation, don't think we should give unconditional support for Israel anymore, certainly don't want us to go around supporting dictators in Africa or anywhere else, don't want us to go around getting in these overseas wars based on false or exaggerated supposed threats to our national security. I mean, what's far more important for the Democrats, if they're going to win in November, is not to have an African-American woman as their vice president, but to have a vice president who can put a check on Joe Biden, who is as hawkish as Rice is, you know, and then to say that, no, we're going to have Joe's going to be a little more moderate as president than he was as senator. The left wing of the Democratic Party and the more libertarian oriented independents who want to get rid of Trump, what they need is a sign from the Democrats that we're not going to go back to the foreign intervention that has gotten us in so much trouble before. And if he chooses Rice, it's going to be just the opposite message. It's going to be say, hey, folks, you better vote green or libertarian because you sure as hell can't get any hope from the Democrats now.
Hey, y'all, check it out. The Libertarian Institute, that's me and my friends, have published three great books this year. First is No Quarter, The Ravings of William Norman Grigg. He was the best one of us. Now he's gone, but this great collection is a truly fitting legacy for his fight for freedom. I know you'll love it. Then there's Coming to Palestine by the great Sheldon Richman. It's a collection of 40 important essays he's written over the years about the truth behind the Israel-Palestine conflict. You'll learn so much and highly value this definitive libertarian take on the dispossession of the Palestinians and the reality of their brutal occupation. And last but not least is the great Ron Paul, the Scott Horton Show interviews 2004 through 2019, interview transcripts of all of my interviews of the Good Doctor over the years on all the wars, money, taxes, the police state, and more. So how do you like that? Pretty good, right? Find them all at libertarianinstitute.org/books. Hey, you guys may know I'm involved in some Libertarian Party politics this year, but you can't hear or read about that at the Libertarian Institute due to 501c3 rules and such. So make sure to sign up for the interviews feed at scotthorton.org and keep an eye on my blog at scotthorton.org/stress. Hey y'all, Scott here. If you want a real education in history and economics, you should check out Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. Tom and a really great group of professors and experts have put together an entire education of everything they didn't teach you in school, but should have. Follow through from the link in the margin at scotthorton.org for Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. Man, I'll tell you what, to think that anybody could support war in Libya in the year 2011, beginning before Osama was even dead, when we still got troops in Iraq allied with the Shia, still hunting down with drones and special ops guys the last remnants of what was then called the Islamic State of Iraq, Zarqawi's group, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, to take their side in Libya in that moment. you know, yeah, say what you will about invading Iraq. Saddam wasn't in the middle of putting down a bin Ladenite insurgency at the time that we invaded and took their side against him, for God's sake. And, you know, I'll never forget, and I'm sorry for repeating myself, everybody, but I love this story so much. I'm driving down Sunset Boulevard in L.A., and I'm listening to right-wing radio, and the host is a Rush Limbaugh clone, kind of typical sort of a guy, the guy that comes on after Rush and just parrots all the same stuff. And he says, even Susan Rice says it's true that Gaddafi is giving all of his army Viagra so that they can rape every woman and girl that they find on their march east to Benghazi. And if even Susan Rice says that's true, when everybody knows what a black, liberal, female, feminine woman she is over there at the United Nations, well, then you know it's true when we gotta invade.
Yeah, she has. And here's the whole point: is that on the key foreign policy issues of the day.
Parentheses. That wasn't true. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, right. On the key foreign policy issues of the day, Rice is far closer to the Bush administration than she is to the majority of rank and file Democrats. And again, this is and that's supposedly her expertise. And she really doesn't. That's the thing that why Rice? I mean, you know, for one thing, if you want to have a black woman, I mean, have someone who has ties to the black community, you know, like Karen Bass or somebody like that, you know. I mean, she doesn't have particularly close ties to the black community. In fact, she is a resident of Maine, which is like the whitest state in the country. I mean, you know, well, she really doesn't add anything to the ticket, other than she's kind of a soulmate to Joe Biden.
And what a weird way to get the VP slot too, right? That, you know, there's this quota of the identity of who this has to be, kind mm-hmm. of thing. Anyway, and you know what though, and also of course, there's the fact she's never run for anything before at all. I mean, she is absolutely untested in terms of, you know, public attraction. Her, and I don't know much about Karen Bass or how people feel about her, but I read a hilarious thing by Kevin Barron at Defense News saying Rice has too much baggage, but Kamala Harris is a promising hawk. She's a reasonable interventionist, and I think that we could work with her. How about her?
Yeah. I remember. I remember. I had an article that came out when she was running for president earlier this year, that about how right wing her foreign policy views were, and in fact, she was a prominent Zionist publication praised her as being more AIPAC than J Street. In other words, you know, that she allies with the right wing American Israel Public Affairs Committee than the more moderate J Street, which is a Zionist pro-Israel but anti-occupation group. And which and you know, most more and more Democrats are identifying with the J Street wing. That's not, it's not as, not as critical of Israel as I am, but J Street is certainly better than AIPAC by a long shot. But she still allies with AIPAC and their very hardline view on, you know, defending the settlements and the occupation and the like. And And this is at a time, you know, again, where the rank and file Democrats have moved way to the left on this issue. In fact, especially young Democrats, millennials. I mean, Israel and Palestine to them is, you know, what Central America and Southern Africa were, you know, to those of us who came of age in the 1980s.
Yeah, thank God for that.
It's a litmus test for one's view on human rights and international law, and if the Democrats are going to win, they're going to need a high turnout. And you can't have people like Rice and Harris and Biden and this awful plank that they push through the Democratic platform, which seems to, you know, essentially be indistinguishable, you know, from the, you know, hard line, you know, pro-Israel policies that have been going on for decades.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I wonder if it'll even work. After all, the incumbent always wins in America, as it is anyway. And obviously Trump is aberration. And in fact, if the old saying or the cliche or something that the old aphorism that anything can change in politics overnight kind of thing, that was ever true. It's true with this character, our current president here. But really, H.W. Bush is the only incumbent who lost since I was a toddler anyway. And that was because he was running on 16 years of Reagan era, right? So there was a real pendulum swing after 12 years already
and there was a strong
of Reagan
third party,
and Bush.
But, challenge in the form of Ross Perot, which
that's true, absolutely a huge
vote.
Spoiler,
I mean,
there.
Clinton only got a plurality.
Yep.
Of the popular vote.
That is true. That is definitely true. But you know, in any case, though, but Clinton was elected twice. Again, you're right with Perot's help, but also, you know, Bush was not necessarily on a partisan basis. Bush did too. Obama did too. And you know, I don't know, man. I think Biden getting married somehow to a gimmick. Like, it has to be a black woman, you know, to satisfy whatever faction on the left is. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't even know if he's going to go along with it, honestly. I'd only put it at like 50-50. I think he might balk at that because, after all, what would you do if they were trying to saddle you with Harris or Rice? I mean, these people are a lead weight at best.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is that if they really want to go for a black woman, there are far better candidates.
There must be millions of them, right?
When you start getting somebody whose politics are as, you know, hawkish and interventionist as any white male politician, you know, it's tokenism.
Yeah. No, you're right. And look, you grab any idiot off the street of any description, they're going to be better than Susan Rice and Kamala Harris, the butcher of Benghazi. And I don't mean the Benghazi massacre. I mean the whole war there. And the prosecutor of Northern California there. You know, these people.
Yeah, she was attorney general for the state of California. Yeah. She was the DA for San Francisco. And it would be particularly ironic, you know, given that there is growing awareness about the abuse by police and DA, the district attorney's offices and things like that, they get someone who is part of the problem rather than part of the solution.
Remember how easily
is not the main factor here.
Yeah. And remember how easily Tulsi took her down, you know, 9 months ago or so when she goes, yeah, you locked up people for pot. And then when they asked you if you smoked it, you laughed and you tried to keep a guy on death row, even though everybody knew he didn't do it by hanging on some technicality. And the whole audience was like, oh, laters for you. She was done. She was out in like 2 or 3 weeks after that.
Yeah.
She had nothing to come back with. Syria or something.
Who is reasonably smart and has a lot of promise, but man, she really did blow her campaign. And again, Susan Rice, as you noted, has not campaigned at all. And given both Joe Biden's age and penchant for gaffes, the Democrats could really use a vice president who's a good candidate, who's a good campaigner. And again, neither Rice nor Harris add anything to that.
Yep. All right, I'm so sorry. I just realized how late I am and gotta go here. And I'm very sorry for talking all over your interview. I'll cut out half of it at least. But thank you very much for coming back on the show, Stephen. It's great to talk to you again.
Always good to talk to you.
All right, you guys. That is Stephen Zunis. He is a professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. The Scott Horton Show, Anti-War Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A. APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.